My name is Ralph White. I'm an alcoholic. When Ethan was describing the guy he was having breakfast with, I was like, who is that he's talking about? Because I'm not, you know, I'm the, most of the time I think I'm overly serious, I'm a dull guy, I don't see myself as all that exciting and all that interesting. But I want to, before I do anything else, I really want to thank Ethan for coming out and picking me up and hosting me and asking, what is it a host is supposed to? And thank, I'm a low maintenance guy, so just pick me up. We went and ate. We had a good time. Ethan's a very interesting guy. So I, as you know, Ethan's a very interesting guy, and he's one of our vets, and he's serving right now. So Ethan, on a lot of levels, you know, he's serving, you know, right now. He's one of our vets, and he's doing the thing in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And we got a chance to share some very interesting things. So I'm really grateful just on that tip that I got a chance to make a new friend, a very interesting new friend. You know, we get the opportunity when we go out and go from place to place, we get to meet a lot of people, you know, and some are more memorable than others. Not that all of them are memorable. Ethan is one that I'll always remember. The thing about coming out here, I'm not sure about the metaphors you guys use, you know. Jason was talking about taking his clothes off. We're getting ready to talk about emotional sobriety. I'm not that emotionally stable to do the visual with you, Jay. I don't. And then Ethan's talking about sniffing tail. I don't. That's got so many places you can go from where I come from. I'm like, don't put me in that. You're sniffing. Whew, I'm in the South. You know that's where I'm in the South. I am in the South. Lee, sniffing tails. I done sniffed a lot of things in my life, you know. Probably some tails too, but not like he was talking. Not like he was talking about. We don't do that in my, no. Men don't talk, no. You. Somebody is probably getting an inkling that this is probably not the guy they should have had come up to talk about emotional sobriety. Want to congratulate the committee. Rick did a lot to reach out to me over this last year, and Ben, I understand that, you know, you were kind of one of the driving forces behind this thing. I know what it takes to put a deal like this on, you know, and for this to be the first one, my hat is off to you guys, you know. It's nothing like being on the front end of something good. I always wanted to be on the front end of something good. I always wanted to be the front end of a nice party, you know. And so I thank you guys for inviting me to the party. And I'm the very first person that's talking at this thing. You know, should be the tone set. I don't know. You know, the tone setter for the first Appalachian Convention. Ooh. Well, Bob, Jennifer, Sheldon, at least you guys know the bar will not be set too high. So that's the good news. Emotional sobriety. Bill Wilson described it as the next frontier. He wrote a letter to the Grapevine in 1953, and that letter was emotional sobriety, as a lot of you probably know. And for those who don't, and I assume at a gathering like this, we probably don't have anybody in here, but I'm not going to make that assumption. So Bill Wilson was our co-founder. And Bill Wilson, as many people don't know, continually throughout his recovery, self-admittedly struggled with depression. And in 1953, you know, he wrote a letter to the Grapevine. And that letter to the Grapevine summarized what a lot of people who've been sober a long time go through. Now, some folk, I don't like to talk at a meeting about things that that are beyond everybody. I'm not that guy. You know, for me, it's two kinds of speakers in Alcoholics Anonymous. I call them head speakers and I call them heart speakers. I'm a head guy, so I kind of like head speakers. Head speakers speak to my head. Let's figure it out. Let's analyze this. Let's talk about it. You know, and I'm a head guy, you know, but I had a brother in my home group, my first home group, a brother named Brother, and Brother used to say, when heart speaks, heart hears. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, we speak the language of the heart, you know, and so I try to confine it. So I'm not going to try to talk tonight to people. Bill, when he wrote that letter, said many oldsters. That's what he called it. We call them old timers now. And he talked about many have encountered this phenomena, this deal. When I first came around, all I wanted to do was get it off me. I came to you guys October 11, 1986, and I was 33 years old, and I was on a run of bad luck. You know, things had not been going well for me that last year of 1986. You know, I hadn't looked at myself full face in the mirror for about a year. Didn't know where my family was living, didn't know what school my little girl was enrolled in, you know, was not working. I'm one of the ones that descended all the way to the underworld. You know, I'm one of the ones that walked the streets at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And I didn't start out that way. You know, I had a promising career. I had promising jobs. In fact, I had a career and I had jobs and I had some successes. And I was the guy, you know, I'm one of six boys. I have five brothers. And I was the first kid off my block to go to college, then my brother after him. And we made our mom proud. We were written up in everybody in the neighborhood. To white boys. That's my last name. You know, everybody in the neighborhood. So everybody in the neighborhood knew the white boys. And my mom was accustomed to being proud. And my mom was accustomed to having these high achievers. And my mom was accustomed to sleeping well at night. She was accustomed to going to events and standing up and clapping her hands because her sons were receiving some kind of award or some kind of achievement or some kind of accolade. You know, I went off to college and I came out of there and I started working. And I ended up working. Finally, I had risen up to in a position, you know, where I was working in the law department of a major utility company in California, and I had like 80 people who worked under me, and I had an office I sat in, and I had a big glass window, and it allowed me to look out on the workforce. The downside of that is it allowed the workforce to look in on me, and that's not cool when you coming in off one of them long runs, and you know, you do that whiplash thing and look to see if anybody's looking at you, and everybody's looking at you, you know. The book describes me really to a T in lots of places, and it talks about the alcoholic of my variety is the real Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, you know, and I'm the Dr. Jekyll, I'm the double life guy, I'm actually a triple life guy, I'm the guy that's the business guy by day, you know, and I'm the vampire by night, and if you alcoholic of my variety, the vampire always outgrows the businessman, the vampire always outgrows the housewife, the vampire always outgrows the PTA president, the vampire always outgrows the bank teller. And pretty soon the vampire started going to work and they didn't pay the vampire to come to work and the vampire didn't work at work. And so one day they told the vampire, you got to go and take dude with you and I'm out of my dream job. You know, and I proceeded to work. That was in about 85. And from 85 to October of 86, I did what it is that we do. Bill talked about joining that endless procession of sots. We don't use words like that. So some people talk about the book is poorly written. I love it, you know. Even though I've never said the word sots except when reading that book, I still identify joining that endless procession. I'm walking the walk. I'm walking the aimless walk. I come from that place. And so when I hit you guys in October 86, I was full of remorse, I was full of regret, and I was full I'll never be able to forgive myself for the things I had done and what I had become. And I came in here determined and not determined. Determination ain't enough. I've been determined in 85 when I first hit you guys. And determination burned off and I was right back out there. But I came in surrendered. I didn't surrender, I was surrendered. I came in surrendered enough and desperate enough, and I found you guys. It's been easy for me to stay in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous since the day I came to stay. We are a three legacy program, Unity, Recovery, and Service. And our first legacy, that fellowship, you know, our meetings, what we do as a society. That's always been easy for me. I'm a kid that loved reading. I was an avid reader. I love that. And I love stories. And you can find no better stories than the stories that you tell in Alcoholics Anonymous. Never stop telling your stories. I'm a big book guy, and I'm a guy, you know, and I have a lot of friends that talk about I'm not going to share a long drug. But we don't stop telling our stories. We're a storytelling society. And that's where our power is. And over the course of this weekend, you'll get a lot of people who get up here who I highly respect. You know, I know the speakers this weekend. You're going to get a lot of information this weekend. But that's not the meat of why we come to Alcoholics Anonymous. The information is cool, but the power is the transformation. The transformation. Transformational stories in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the only way you get to see the transformation is if you hear our stories. I love to see the lady that gets up here that looks like the soccer mom. What are you doing with us? And then she starts talking. Oh, please don't leave us. You know, please don't leave. That's the power of Alcoholics Anonymous in our storytelling. And so I fell in love with that. It has not been hard for me to go to meetings. That's always been one of the easiest things for me, being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, is going to meetings. That has not been hard for me. I have not got tired of the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I came in here with that kind of desperation. And as a result of going to enough meetings, if you go to enough meetings in my neck of the woods, I didn't know I was as blessed as I was to come from the place that I came from till I got a chance to start traveling to some places. But every meeting I've ever gone to from day one has a big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, on the table, has the 12 steps. And every meeting I've ever gone to, I can't speak to other people, they've stressed the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they've stressed the 12 steps of recovery. All my home group. So I'm not one of those people to come from. I never heard that. In 1985, when I first came, I didn't hear it because I wasn't listening for it. You know, it wasn't that they weren't saying it. I wasn't hearing it. You know, but when I came back, so when you go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous like I was going, and when you go to enough meetings, you'll hear some common themes. And one of the common themes I kept hearing was, you know, take the steps. And we're in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm the kind of guy, why be in a 12-step program and not practice the 12 steps? Anything, I mean, that's another thing that's not a virtue of mine. It's not a gift of mine. It's just a blessing of mine. I was born with that. I'm an all-in guy. I always have been. I don't have stuff. You know, when I'm a sports fanatic, and I don't just look at sports casually. No, I collect baseball cards. I remember statistics. You know, I whatever it is that I get into, I get all the way into it. I subscribe to High Times. You know, I'm just, you know, I'm a student of my craft when I get in it, you know. So why be in a 12-step program and not know about the 12 steps? And being a guy like me, eager, hungry, and, you know, I heard some people describe the 12 steps in a way I hadn't heard before. I heard them talk about it, and it seemed like they were alive. They seemed available, they seemed achievable, and they seemed desirable. A lot of times, folk make it seem like we need to do it. It's hard work. But it got to be done if you want us to get, you know, if you want to recover from what I suffer from, it's got the work. I'm not a guy to do a lot of talking about the work and the written. No, I'm a guy, man. I'm telling you if you knew, and you come from the dark place that I come from, it's the way out. It's the way out. And it's not only the way out, it's a hell of a way out for a guy like me. And so these people presented it in a way, and so asked my mom, you know, if we could open the doors and invite a couple of people through. Me and my brother were staying at my mom's house. I was a year sober. And two people from that group came to my mom's house, and they started taking a group of about 12 of us through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, page by page, line by line. And we went through to the first seven chapters as a group. When it says pray, we pray. When it says write, we wrote. You know, when it says share, we share. We talked about amends, we made amends. And we went through that process. And we liked it. Took us about a year, and I do what I do when I like something. Do it again. And some more people had heard about it, and they said, we want to do that. And they came through the house, and we did it again. And the same thing repeated, and some more people heard, and we came through the house, and we did it again, and we outgrew the house. And Sunday morning, it'll be about 250 people sitting around the room. in the Never Too Early Big Book Workshop that started at my mom's house in 1987. And they'll be sitting around tables, and we're in the fourth step, and we'll be going through that, and we'll be going through that process. So I started putting my feet on a path that goes, and when I got in that recovery process, you know, because I'm desperate, you know, because I'm one that was badly mangled by drugs and alcohol. I was badly mangled, you know, by this disease that we suffer from, and I was hungry, you know, and when I first came in here, that's all I wanted to, get it off me, get it off me. I have a friend that talks about, you know, when you're in the disease of alcoholism, he said, you know, when you practice in the disease, it's like having sex with a gorilla. You ain't through until the gorilla is through, you know, and in my case, since I had added all kind of other stuff to the mix, you know, it was like having sex with a gorilla on Viagra. You know, the gorilla is not letting up. And I'm like, damn, gorilla, smoke a cigarette, do something. The gorilla was like, just tossing me. You know, I was wild. I was done. You know, and I did not want to revisit. I did not want to rematch with that. And so that was enough. You know, that was enough. And in my early years, man, just that idea of being free from the ravages, you know, of drinking and using, man, that was, and I got, you know, the first piece that all of us get. You know, I got that before I even wrote inventory. Before I did any amends, I got relief. And a lot of folks settle for relief. I'm not here to comment on whatever anybody wants. That's not my deal. I really don't trip off that. You know, if that's what you settle for, then that's what you settle for. You know, but when I go to a banquet, I'm not stopping at the hors d'oeuvres. You know, I'm doing the whole thing. But if some folk get full off crackers and cheese, that's cool. You know, but there's a banquet. You know, and so what the program really offers is freedom. You know, what this program really offers is freedom. But a lot of times folks settle for, and I ain't tripping. You know, I ain't tripping. We have a third tradition. A third tradition is really broad. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking, and that's cool. You know, and anybody who has that desire to stop drinking is on the team right there. Can't nobody put you off. Can't nobody tell you you ain't a member. Can't nobody tell you you're not on the team. I got a desire, I'm on the team. That's a wonderful thing. But everybody that's on the team ain't in the game. Put me in the game. I think that's what Bill was talking about when he started talking about this emotional stuff. Put me in the goddamn game. You know, I've never been, now, check it, I don't mean to be flip. I don't mean, you know, to be, you know, just the guy trying to be funny. You trust me, we need bench warmers. We need spectators. We need fans. We need cheerleaders. We even need commentators on the game who feel like that puts them in the game. That's all okay, you know. We need announcers, but put me in. Put me in. I've always wanted to be a guy. I'm an all-in guy. You know, from October 11, 19, I've been all in. I've been all in. I'm the kind of guy, you can't even take me to strip clubs because I don't like looking. Put me in, you know. Put me in the game. And there are benefits to that, you know. And so this idea of, you know, this idea of hitting this wall. So I got on my knees in the third step, you know, when I was with this group. And the first third steps I did, they were solely designed. It's a trip because when I get to the third step, and we'll have somebody that's talking about the third in the morning. I think Bob will probably talk about the third, and I'm not going to even venture into that because when you hear Mr. D, done deal. But, you know, the third step, I got on my knees and I said, God, I offer myself to you to build with me and to do with me as you will. And here's where we get to. He said, relieve me. You know, a lot of people make the book seem like it's this sacred tome and it's this sacred text. And some drunks wrote the book. You know, the book is not, we and all of us this weekend are going to be talking about the book. And trust me, it's the basis for our recovery in our fellowship and in our society. You know, I'm a guy that's a book guy. But the book is not the treasure, it's the map. The book is not the treasure, it's the map. I don't think that the authors of the book ever wanted it to be dogma, ever decided it should be doctrine. You know, the book is not the treasure, it's the map. So even though, you know, I'm a guy to think that, yeah, it was divinely inspired because Bill wrote some stuff that he couldn't have known, and, you know, so the pen was God. I'm a firm believer in that, but, you know, I don't ascribe. describe this spooky. Can't talk. Because Bill is tricky. He's tricky. You know, he did some stuff in the book. And at the third step is the first bait and switch moment. I'm like, what part of the game is this? I said, God, I offer myself to you to build with me and to do with me as you will. Relieve me of the bondages. Wait a minute. I didn't come up in here for that. How come that don't say relieve me of the obsession to drink? How come it don't say relieve me of my alcohol? I came here for that. What part of the game? Wait a minute, Bill. What are you trying to do? Relieve me of the bondage of self. Wow, whole deal. And so now that's the rest of this whole journey. Now at first I saw that differently. I was just happy to get it off me. Have it off me. Not be in and not be plagued by, you know, and when you get it off you, some stuff starts happening. You get an automatic pay raise. In my case, you get a pay raise. It wasn't working, you know. So you start earning some money, but you get an automatic pay raise when you stop getting older. You know, things get different just right there. You get some keys, most of us, to some stuff that really works. You hit that magic trifecta. You know, you get a car and you got registration and insurance all at the same time. You know. For some of us, that's the trifecta, you know. And the car is running too, you know. So you get magical stuff that starts happening. And for most folk in society, it's just the regular mundane stuff. But for people like us, people say, and I heard it all the time, why should we be clapping for things that you should have been doing all the time? You're right. But I come in here, Ethan and I were talking, and he was talking about his sponsor told him at the age that he started getting loaded is probably when his emotional, that's when he stopped growing emotionally. And so even though we have no scientific proof of that, that's always a kind of good barometer for many people. And so for guys like me, yes, I do want hand claps for having a bank account. I do want hand claps for getting my driver's license. I don't need them, but it helps, you know. And so when we come to Alcoholics Anonymous, we do start rewarding just that whether it should or not. Okay, all right, you're right. We shouldn't have to get it, but it sure feels good. And so we give you that 30-day chip. Ooh, you have not drank for 30 days, 60-day chip, 90-day chip. And ooh, you got your driver's license. Ooh, you got a bank account. Ooh, you've been on a job for a month and haven't missed a day. Ooh, you know, we say stupid stuff like that. But it's incredible. Encouraging, because I come from a dark place, and many of us, not all of us, we sitting here and Carl Morris, Carl always talks about it's the only place we come. Yeah, the bank robber might be sitting right next to the bank president. We got some bank president. We have some CEOs sitting up in here, and sometimes they don't identify with that. That's cool. But we come in and we do that and we start getting those things and they start coming back. And here's the deal when your name is Ralph. The first part of my recovery is so much about acquiring. It's so much acquisition. It's physical acquisition. You know, I came in about, man, I had a size 28 waist. I killed for a 20, you know. No, I wouldn't, because I don't want to do what it takes to get a size 28 waist and to keep a size 28 waist. So while you're playing, you know, it ain't that serious. I'll take the gut, you know, if it, in exchange for what you guys have given me. But I came in here, so I acquired some weight. I acquired, you know, some features coming back. You know, I acquired some things. I acquired hygiene. I acquired, you know, practice and hygiene, things that I knew already. I acquired a bank account. I acquired a girlfriend, and then I acquired a wife. I acquired a home, and I acquired a job. Not only did I acquire a job, I acquired a career. I acquired some respect, and I acquired some things. And if your name is Ralph, you know, the thing that's insidious, I call it the tyranny of the blessings. You know, I will get so caught up in maintaining the blessings, I'll forget to maintain the relationship with the one that gave them to me. And so what it is that'll happen to me, I'll let the life that AA gave me get in the way of my AA life. It's start doing this, and you know, I gotta hustle this money, I gotta make this important. And the things that used to enrich me and that drove me, see, I'm still on an emotional tip. I've never been able to be satisfied with material stuff, though I've chased it. Bill talks about these incessant demands on other people, on other things, for perfect money, perfect approval, perfect romance, for me to be okay with myself. I'll get a new car. When the new car smell well wear off for a guy like me, it's just a place, it's just a vehicle to get me from point A to point B. See the girl, want to get the girl. Ooh, I know if I get her, I'll be set. We get together, give me 3 or 4 months, next thing you know, why she got to look at me like that? Why she talking like that? What's wrong with you? Know, and I'm looking around for something else. Can't wait. You know, interview real well, get up at the job. Man, I'm willing to do anything. I'll make copies. I'll go get coffee. Blah, blah, blah. Through, you know, 2 weeks into that. What? Don't be looking at her. That ain't my job. You know what I mean? I've never been a guy who's been able to be satisfied with outward stuff, though that's my driver. That's what drives me. You know, so at a certain point, you hit a point, and for many people in recovery, get to this point, and I start looking up, and now I see the speaker come up to the point. I know what Sheldon going to say when he get up here. I could say it for him, you know. Oh, man, here we go with Rick again. He ain't got over that girl yet. We still got to hear that from him. You know I'm the only person that does this in meetings, you know. Because everybody else says there are no bad speakers in AA. You know, I know that's the part, you know. There are no bad speakers, but there are bad listeners. I'm one of the bad listeners, you know. And sometimes there's a speaker that gets up to the podium, and I'll be like, I'm not feeling him, you know, and don't let one of you guys go up and say, ooh, you said exactly what I'd be like, don't be encouraging him. You know, what are you doing, you know? I think Alcoholics Anonymous, is like a big, what makes it easy for me to go to meetings and to sit down in meetings, and to listen in meetings, and to let you guys listen in meetings, because I want everybody to hear with my ears, you know. In order to enable you to listen, I see Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, I see it as a big concert. But unlike a concert, you know, concerts usually are one genre. If it's country, you're going to see Taylor Swift. You're going to see, you know, all these country people on the bill. You're not going to see Taylor Swift, you know, and then you got Snoop over here, and then you got Luther. You're just not going to see that. But at Alcoholics Anonymous, it's a big concert, and they sing in every genre. You know, so sometimes when a guy is up here talking and I'm not feeling him, I'll be like, oh, he's rapping, you know. Oh, that's country western. Oh, that's opera. That's R&B. I like that. I like that. Oh, that's jazz. Okay. I'm down with that. And then we have them, you know, so but I realize, you know, somebody else is feeling something else. Then we have those transcendent people. You'll hear some of them this weekend. The ones like Streisand or the one that Michael, everybody pretty much, oh, yeah, okay, we all agree. And we got some of them up in here this weekend, you know. But I sit in meetings and I get restless and I get irritable and I get discontent. And I hit a certain place in my recovery. I've had 3 valleys in my recovery. And the last valley in my recovery, when we talk about this emotional sobriety, the next frontier, and Bill has some things that he posits. I'm going to say some other things. I'm going to talk from my experience. I'm not going to just talk from Bill's letter. I'm going to talk from my experience. Emotional sobriety, the next frontier. Because get this deal, you know, I'm real clear on my third step. I made a decision to turn my will and my life over, and I've given that decision legs by doing the action that shows that you're doing it. You know, the third step is just a decision. 4 through 9, that'll turn over. 4 through 12 will turn over my will and my life. So I do what it is that it takes to do that. And I don't care. Sometimes it doesn't look like it. Okay, that's cool. You know, the God of my understanding now, and the God that I'm still, you know, building this relationship with, knows it's a whole lot of room, and grace is a broad umbrella. You'll hear people talk about the road gets narrow. You know, everything we say in Alcoholics Anonymous, take it in context. Don't do it standalone. You know, because, yeah, the road gets narrow, but at the same time, it says, join us on the broad highway. Grace is a broad highway. Grace is a broad highway. So even though there may be days when you look at me from the outside, and there are days when I look at me from the inside and say, dude, you all outside of God's will. I think God's will is a big house. I go in Ralph's room every now and then, but I don't never leave God's house. You know, and so sometimes I'm up in there playing with my stuff and doing some stuff. But I made that decision a long time ago, so I've been real cool on that. And God has done what it is that he does. And like it says in the 10th step, you know, I recall as if, and he says, this attitude we have, it just comes. It just comes. So even though that part is cool, it's still days. So if that part is cool, Mr. Speaker, you came up in here 31 plus years ago just wanting to get the gorilla off you. If the gorilla is off you, why is it some days you don't want to get out of bed? Why is it some days you just feel like, what's the point? Why is it that some days you still feel empty and unfulfilled and you still collide with your fellows? What's going on with that? So I hit my third valley. I was 22 years sober. At the time, I said, damn, they need a recovery home or a sober living for old time. You know, they need somewhere else. And here's the deal. And new friends, don't be like, oh, I don't even know what he's talking about. Yeah, okay. Okay, we're talking about freedom from bondage of self, because that's the whole deal. This whole 12-step process, this ego-reducing exercise that a guy like me can use as ego inflation, this ego-reducer that we do, you know. So this piece right here, so at 22 years sober, I'm hitting that place, you know, and I thought I needed a treatment center and a recovery home for old-timers. I had lost a 20-year marriage in front of everybody. I'd lost my home in front of everybody. I remember Bob Darrell, who's here right now, has a state line retreat, and it's the forerunner of most of the, and this format somewhat comes from that state line retreat. I do a conference at home in May. I'm going to do a shameless plug. I got some flyers for it, you know, Woodstock West, if follows Bob's format. And this particular year, I was getting ready to talk on the third step. And I was in my room getting ready to talk about this decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. It was December, and I was in my room, and my then wife called, and she said they just posted, and we were in the process of breaking up. She said they just posted a note on the door. It's December. We got to be gone. All of my recovery had been about acquiring. I wasn't accustomed to losing. I wasn't accustomed to giving stuff up. Although the basis of recovery, true recovery, not stuff, but true recovery, the basis of recovery is about relinquishing. You know, spiritual growth never talks about acquisition. Never talks about acquisition. If you look in our text, anytime it talks about spiritual growth, it's going to say things like abandon. You know, relinquish, give up. So it's all about, you know, surrendering. You know, but Ralph lives in the material world too. And that's this emotional sobriety tip, you know. I had not been accustomed to losing on the material. So that night, that morning, I was getting ready to talk on three. I'm upstairs getting dressed. And I got to go downstairs and talk about this God of my understanding and renewing my contract. Because I'm giving myself to him to do something with me. Getting in the game. I call that the entry point. And I have trained feet. Recovery centers in my thinking. I mean, my disease centers in my thinking. Recovery centers in my feet. And thank God I have trained feet. And one of the things that happens to a guy like me that you guys have done for me, you know what? I'm better with you guys than I am by myself. That's one reason I keep coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm better with you than I am by myself. I'm not one that holds up the standard as, this is how I am. Yeah, that's how I am. That's not always how I want to be. I aspire for better. I don't aspire for better than you. I aspire for better than me. I want to be better than I am. I have prejudices. You know, I have blind spots. I have judgment. I have things that are in me that I aspire to be better than. And I find that I'm better when I'm with you guys. And I find that when I plug into you wholeheartedly, I get out of me. And so when I'm standing up there talking, I don't have no filter. When I get in front of you guys, I don't have a filter. For some reason, I don't know what it is, but I've given myself so completely to you, I feel safe and I feel comfortable, and I don't have a filter. I'm transparent in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm not a transparent guy. I'm a hiding guy. I'm a secret-keeping guy. I'm a don't-tell-nobody your business guy. But something happens when I get with you. So I'm standing up there that morning, in one of the low lows, and I go to talk, and it's December. So we're getting put out the house. I'm a guy that makes a big deal out of Christmas. I have two girls. Both of them were still young then. They had never known not a big Christmas, and I now no money. And we were losing our house. And my wife and I were in the process of disintegrating. And I was doing it all in front of you guys. And I remember sharing at that conference that, and I didn't know it was going to come out, but I don't know how I couldn't know, because you guys get my stuff. I live with you out loud. You, this is where I come. You know, you my corner man. You my cut man. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous, I look at us like that. I look at us a lot of ways. You know, I know when you get a guy up here, you be like, where this guy coming from? Cut man. You know, fight, any fight fans up in here? You know, when you a hell of a fighter, you need a good corner. You need a cut man. If you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm going to give you something. Don't leave us, especially when times get hard. Especially when they get hard. Because life is big. You know how they say God won't give you more than you can handle? That's true, but life will. That's why you better have God. You know, and every now and then, you know, life will serve you up. Life will serve you. I don't care who you are. I don't care what steps you work in. I don't care. You know, there are a couple of parts in the book that are instructive in talking about this emotional sobriety thing. One of the places in the book, it talks about these low spots. It says, if the alcoholic fails to enlarge and perfect his spiritual life through self-sacrifice and working with others, he won't be able to survive the certain, not uncertain, not speculative, not maybe every, no, the certain trials and low spots ahead. Thank God. And I'm here to tell you about that with flesh on. You know, the certain trials and low spots. And every now and then, life is going to deal with. And don't be fighting back. Don't try to fight when they come and put the note on the door. Don't, I'm going to make you give me my. No, no. Sometimes you just got to take a knee. Sometimes you got to take a knee and you got to come to us. And that's what I do. And we come to you and you come back to a meeting. And you know, you come to the corner and we stitch you up and we patch you up and we throw you back out there. God damn it, you a champion, Rick. You can do this. You know, we patch you back up. Jennifer, you can do this, baby. We got you. We got you. And we keep coming back to each other and we keep coming back to meetings and we keep getting patched up and we keep standing up and then we stand. We don't go around the low spots. We don't go around the trials. We don't go around the stuff, but we stand. And for people, that's huge. That's big. And we stand. And we come back, and then we get armed with what it is that makes us the most useful and the most effective that we have our experience. You know, having experience is fine. It's just getting experience that hurts so much. Somebody in here is just getting some experience. Don't trip. You know, because the more experience you get, that means God got something for you to do. He got something for you to do, you know. So I stood up there that morning, you know, and I talked in front of everybody that morning. And, you know, and I was like, man, you know, in front of, and went back to my room. Didn't know how I was going to have Christmas that day. And my fellowship gave my family Christmas. Never forget that state line that year. I never forget it. At my lowest. At my lowest. At my lowest, I learned some things in the valley. Talking about emotional sobriety, I learned you can grow in the valley. I learned you can grow wherever you plant it. I'm going somewhere else. That 22nd year of recovery, I'm going, and I'm traveling to Chicago, and I'm going to talk at a conference. Going to talk on the third step. See, I don't need to talk on the third step, because anytime I'm talking on the third step, something's going to go on in my life. I'm going to talk on the third step in Chicago. You know, this is still in the valley still. I'm still in the valley. Stayed in the valley about 3 years. I didn't work. You know, I didn't have a, you know, I was working, and I left my job to go into real estate. And I went into real estate on the tail end of when it was booming. Came out making a lot of money in the, hey, I don't know nothing about downtown. Man, when it went down, I didn't do a deal for 3 years. I mean, I'm 3 years, and I'm going through, and I'm in Chicago, and I called my college roommate. His dad had died, and I called him to offer him condolences. And when I was talking to him on the phone, he was telling me how he still had all his properties, how he still had, was doing well, how he had all his money. He was moving his daughter in. She had broke up with her husband, putting her in a guest. I'm like, and it felt like he was cutting me with a knife. I had an unfamiliar feeling that I hadn't felt in a long time. I was jealous. He was pissing me off every time he was talking about his successes. You know, I used to revel. You know, I was used to doing that. I was used to, rap, okay, yeah, okay, I like. But now, you know. I heard somebody say, I read something somewhere the other day where it says, you know, yeah, I want you to be okay, just not before me. You know, just, you know. I said, ooh, I didn't know that. You know, so I'm on the phone, and I hang up the phone in O'Hare Airport, and I'm crying. It's like, this is why I'm not a big, I'm, you know, when the book, it talks about your real reliance must be on God. I'm big on that, but it's situational in the sense of sometimes I can't go directly to God, even though my reliance is on him. I wasn't feeling it. It's like when you can't get cell reception sometimes and you don't remember nobody's phone number. And so you don't have no cell. You don't know how to call. I didn't have God's number. Didn't want to call him. Couldn't pray. I wish one of you guys had walked through whole air talking about this too shall pass. I would have been like, you know, you know how sometimes you don't even want to hear it. You don't even want to hear, man, miss me with that. Here you come with that, that program. I'm there. I'm in one of those spiritual dead zones. There are spiritual dead zones, just like sometimes you don't have cell reception, sometimes you don't have grace reception. Too much resentment, no grace reception. Too much anger, no grace reception. Too much jealousy, no grace. And I had all of them working at the same time. You know, but again, remember, I got trained feet. Can't pray. Don't want to pray. In O'Hare Airport, crying. Got trained feet. I don't know. This is what I do. Anytime anything go on, I call my sponsor, I call somebody. I got a lot of closed mouth friends. I call one of my closed mouth friends. You know, here's the deal. New friends, old friends. When you in the graceless zone, when you in the cutoff zone, when you in the dead zone, when you can't feel it for yourself, I'm gonna tell you something. This is what happened for you, it's what happened for me. I call my boy while we were on the phone. He three-wayed me. God got on the line. Whenever it's two or more of us together, he'll get on the line. He'll get on the line for you too. It's this many of us gathered together right now. He's on the line. He's on the line. Never forget that. You know, I say I'm always better with you guys than I am by myself. Hook me up, got through that, walked through that, walked through the valley, learned the lessons in the valley, learned some things about myself in the valley, in the emotional dead zones, not being tied to myself. You know how you know how you sponsor people? And you know I have a sponsor that says sometimes you're going to have to be the message that you carry. If the message that you carry is that God can handle anything, guess what? Sometimes you're going to have something for him to handle. You just got something for him to handle, you know. And I always used to tell my, you know, the people, my sponsees, you ain't your stuff. Don't trip off that. That's easy to say till you don't have no stuff. Then you squarely face with the message you carry. You squarely face with it. And I'm here to share with you. Not because of what somebody say. Not because of speculation. See, we have some things that the big book writers don't even have. They didn't even have it. They didn't even have it. When Bill wrote the promises behind each one of those steps. There was very limited sample size. When he started writing in 1937, he didn't have evidence that people would be sober 40 years. He didn't have evidence people would be sober 50 years. He didn't even have evidence people would be sober 5 years. But he had a God and he had a vision. And he had an idea. We get to stand on what it is and say, you know what, dude? We don't know what inspired you, but what you wrote. So I don't say it's in the, you know, it's true because it's in the book. It's in the book because it's true. And some of it has been proven to be true. And we have a greater understanding of that than the writers did. We have sample size. So the things I'm sharing with you tonight about the valley and about emotional sobriety, I'm talking about things I know. I'm talking about things I know. I'm not speculating. You know, I used to like to get up to a topic meeting and share. I remember, you know, anybody like me, Leslie's heard this, but anybody like me that sometimes get retroactively embarrassed at something you did way back when you were two or three. You know, I remember going to an 11-step meeting, but I was like 6 months sober, and they were on step 11, and they were sharing, and I get up to the podium. I don't even need to be at the 11th step. I already pray. I started praying when I got... I just want to do like this when I used to love to go up and share the four step meeting, you know, and hadn't worked the four step, you know, I don't need to work something there, talk about it, you know, I don't let a detail like that get in the way. I know nobody else is guilty of that, but, you know, but I'm talking about things I know. I'm talking about walking through the valley. Talking about some high state experience. I'm talking about, so for me, when I talk about this emotional sobriety deal, it is totally not connected to, and as a result of getting disconnected from my stuff, I've had to experience this idea. Now, here's the cold piece, though. This is the piece I still struggle with, and this is the part that I'm still growing through. I'm 64 years old, and I imagine I'll be growing through it till they plant me. These faulty dependencies on other folk for security, for happiness. And Bill calls it this idea of being in a perfect relationship, this idea of perfect and top approval and acceptance, this, you know, this idea of how it's supposed to look. And all of us, if you got a spouse, if you got a mate, if you got a son, if you got a daughter, if you got a boss, if you got an employee, if you live in this life, and then you afflict it with the selfishness and self-centeredness that we suffer from, that deep self-will run riot, although we don't think so. And I don't know why you're looking at me. That ain't me. I know. Although we don't think so. You know, when you come from that place, you know, that crippling affliction. So the markers for me in emotional maturity and emotional growth, the biggest markers for me is allowing you to be you. Allowing you to be you. Sometime I've just had to grow up and shut my mouth. You know, Les and I, she sponsors a lot of women. I sponsor me, you know, and she'll share with me not about her sponsee stuff, but about sponsees and situations and what. Shut up. You ain't got a way in. You don't even know these people. And then you ain't got a way in on how she does what it is that she does. And then with my sponsee, and then with my daughter. I mean, you know, just and. A measure of my growth is respecting you to be, because here's how I am. Who's going to do 4 and 5? Whoever it is, do 4 and 5, you know, I'm all up in, you know, that deal. I'm the kind of person, this is, talk about emotional sobriety and the way that I can be. I will want you, many of my resentments over the years, and this is where I've seen emotional maturity and emotional growth, allowing you to think with your brain, talk with your mouth, hear with your ears. I want you to think with my brain, hear with my ears, and talk with my mouth about you. I want you I want you to adopt my opinion of you over your opinion of you. How you gonna not know you stupid? You know? I got resentments like that. They don't know their place. Don't they know that? That's the stupidest thing ever, and they should know. They got the right, you know. Emotional sobriety, the next frontier. So I got in the game, and got committed to something other than just the drinking and using. Well, I'm not knocking the physical sobriety. If you just don't drink and you just don't use, you might stop going to jail on the weekends. If you just don't drink and you just don't use, you might make it home with a whole paycheck. If you just don't drink and you just don't use, you might make it to work on Monday morning. But what this program has to offer is a whole lot more than that. This program is about freedom and not just relief. I sometimes am so connected to what you guys have given this guy. And I wasn't looking for it. All I wanted was to get it off me. I just wanted to get it off me. And you've grown me up. It's some things that takes place in our meetings, and we don't even see them. New friends. It's not the reason we come, but it's the byproduct. It's the ripples. It's the ripples of getting in the game. It's the reason why you'll have so many men and women who will share with you. And sometimes we want it for people before they want it for themselves. You know, I'm glad my sponsor says, I know who's in the game. I don't even give them more. And people that's in, don't be belittling people that ain't. Don't make it look unattractive. Don't make it look unavailable. Make it look appealing. Make it look attractive. This way of life is the better way to go. This way of life has huge benefits and advantages. As a result of putting my feet on a path that really goes somewhere, as a result of that. You know, when I share sometimes, the book talks about the alcoholic, you know, is like a tornado roaring through people's lives. And for some of us who grew up in the age that we grew up, who do all other manner of stuff, it's not only like a tornado, it's like a tsunami running through people's lives. Because it was me times six, me and all my brothers, and we damn near killed my mom. It was six of us. Each one of us that got put out of our homes, and we were all back living under my mom's roof. And we almost killed her. And when I think of the destruction, and when I think of the things I've done that I can't undo, you can't give back sleepless nights. When I did my amends to my ex-wife, she was real clear. You can't give back sleepless nights. You can't give back broken hearts. And so sometimes when I think about it, I don't know that I'm always deserving of this life you guys have afforded me. I don't know that I'm deserving of this level of grace. I don't know that I'm deserving of the friendships and of the respect that I get in my life now. I don't know that I'm deserving of this gift. But it's one thing I do know. My mom is. The ripples of growing up in alcoholism, the ripples that we don't see. You don't see my mom, but she's in this room with us as a result of what you did for her boys, four of us in the program. You don't see that 34-year-old daughter of mine who was two when I was going in her piggy bank. She's a practicing attorney in the state of California. The ripples. You don't see that 4-year-old grandson of mine. Never seen his granddaddy loaded, one day at a time, never will. You know, grandparents, you know, if I'd have known about them, I'd have had them first. Grandkids are the bomb. They're the bomb. The ripples. You don't see River White, 23 years old. graduated from Boston University last May. If it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, the world would not know River White. Me and her mom met 31 years ago. The world wouldn't know her. Can you imagine when you sit in these rooms and you put your feet on a path to go somewhere and you give yourself to this program absolutely and start doing the damn thing? All of the people, we see the ones up in here, we don't see who's sitting with us. This room is 10 times bigger than it is right now. The ripples. That blows me away sometimes when I think about it. The world would not even know her. Go, just think of your world. Who's here as a result of us being here? Who's different as a result of us being here? Who's whole as a result of us being here? Who's changed as a result of us being here? I always wanted to do something important. I always wanted to do something significant. This big boy theater you guys put me into, Alcoholics Anonymous. Can think of nothing more important, can think of nothing more significant than being a participating member of the life-saving, life-changing experience that's Alcoholics Anonymous. Whenever anybody anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand AA to be there, and for that I'm responsible. Take it real serious. Never hear Ralph White say, I don't know why I'm sober. I know exactly why I'm sober. Get a blessing so that I can be a blessing. Recovery for me is a gift from God. What I do with my recovery, my gift to God. My name is Ralph White. I am an alcoholic.
All right, so I got something in my...